The weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity. But understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. The Midwest can't seem to take a break from severe weather this year. There have been tornadoes, thunderstorms, and gusts of strong winds that have damaged power lines, snapped trees, and even destroyed homes. Tornadoes swept across central Illinois on June 17th, including Coles County, Mattoon-Charleston area, and Effingham. There were thousands of people in central Illinois without power. This spring, Illinois leads the country with 140 tornadoes. And here to talk about it is our own Andrew Pritchard to talk about this recent severe weather outbreak, meteorologist from Nutrien Ag Solutions. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Always happy to be here, though I do know that means the weather has likely been rough.
Yeah, we're seeing way too much of you this spring, but lots to talk about. So let's discuss these latest storms. Yet another afternoon and evening with white knuckles here in central Illinois. What were some of the conditions that developed for the tornadoes that happened on June 17th?
Yeah, so the forecast leading up to this event was kind of the big news-making part of it was the very strong jet stream, a very spring-like storm system that was going to be moving into the Midwest. And with a lot of, you know, moisture and instability, the speculation there was, well, if we get a big spring-like storm system coming in here in mid-June, that could do some pretty, you know, damaging things across the area.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting event from the perspective of watching the outlooks that the NOAA Storm Prediction Center were putting out. Clearly, the models were putting out vertical wind shear values that were, at some point, almost record-breaking. Can you talk a little bit about how that played out?
Absolutely. So yeah, as meteorologists and forecasters, you know, we look to the jet stream and the strength of the winds there and sometimes the direction at which they're flowing there, because that tells us a lot about how these storms or hypothetical storms might organize themselves and how they may behave, how these jet stream winds are going to steer them. And so when we see very strong jet stream winds, we start to think storms are going to become organized. That's going to help them maybe become severe. But these were also oriented in such a way that, you know, when you looked at the wind profile, it really brought some stark comparisons to past historic tornado outbreaks. You see a lot of turning with height with those winds, and that really helps those storms kind of rotate and sometimes rotate strongly. And so it is a little bit of a weird feeling when you're a couple days out or getting closer to a potential severe weather event and you're seeing things that you're like, I've almost never seen something this intense before. And you start wondering, well, how is this going to manifest it? You know, should I be sounding a lot of alarms, or is there something that we're missing that's going to kind of keep this from being so severe? But you really just started to go down the list of ingredients here and check some boxes that you could kind of correlate to past really big historic severe weather events in the Midwest in June.
So when you were looking at this event, when did it start to put alarm bells off in your head?
I think that it was Friday or Saturday the week before. This was a Wednesday event. So you're going back almost 4 or 5 days. And the way that, you know, kind of happens, you see maybe this storm system on one of the models starting to kind of look pretty rough. And then you're like, well, is this just one model that is kind of saying this? And you start going down the list of your other longer range weather forecast models that get out into that range 4, 5, 6 days. And it's there on every single one. And then you start looking at some of the, you know, AI and machine learning forecasts, some of these things that try to look back at, you know, decades and decades of weather history, weather maps and weather data, and compare the forecast for this particular day to those days. And you start getting some matches there. And so all of this started to kind of come together really over the weekend. And it was a bit of a surprise to me. We just came out of a couple of really bad days the week before. And so we then are looking at next week, is this really going to happen again? And it kind of stayed there. And you know, as we mentioned, you're seeing some of these really eye-popping charts, you know, 4 to 5 days out. And I almost, you know, well, not almost, I was telling myself, I'm like, I just need the higher resolution models to get into range of this and let them do what they're going to do and see what their you know, forecast is, you know, how are they going to put these ingredients together? And when that happened, of course, they're depicting supercell thunderstorms and tornadoes and environments that are off the charts. And so then you just kind of sit and say, well, at this point, we just need to get to the morning of so we can see where some of these finer details are going to lay. But it was a really good lead time on this severe weather event.
So as this day went on, one thing that was interesting about this event is that, you know, SBC had issued their moderate risk over much of north central and central Illinois, whereas the threat ended up being more central and south central Illinois. Yeah, I'm getting a little fine with my central Illinois geography here, but, you know, areas like Bloomington were sort of in the middle of the moderate risk, whereas they saw pretty, you know, there was a cell that tracked just about at their latitude, but most of the action was south and even well south of there. And you mentioned that in the morning there was this area of organized convection that affected the forecast. Can you talk about how that morning convection impacted the day as things went on and how it shifted the threat south?
Absolutely. So meteorologists, we love acronyms, and a really simple one when we talk about severe weather forecasting is SLIM. That's kind of your four ingredients for severe storms: shear, lift, instability, and moisture. And of course, with this one, we had shear everywhere. We've talked a lot about that. We had plenty of moisture here across, you know, central Illinois. And we also had a lot of lift with this really intense jet stream storm system and jet stream disturbance and area of low pressure. The air was going to want to rise. We were going to generate some thunderstorms there. But the question was, how much instability will we have? And so when meteorologists, we see a forecast where a large area is going to have a lot of ingredients present for severe weather, but we're going to have a morning cluster of storms that's going to come through. That introduces a lot of uncertainty. And so while the Storm Prediction Center had that moderate risk in place across a lot of central Illinois, if you got into the forecast discussion, they really talked about a lot of uncertainty based on this morning area of storms. How long was it going to last? You know, would it linger into the afternoon and kind of, you know, really rain out the event? Or would it get out of there quickly and allow, you know, warm and humid air to kind of surge back north, allow the sun to come out? You know, that's another aspect of this. We're getting close to the summer solstice here. So there's a very strong sun above us. And so when the sun comes out after a thunderstorm, sometimes you can feel like, well, that didn't cool us off at all. Now it's just hot and muggy and the sun's shining on us. And so that can be volatile in a severe weather setup when you get that sunshine to come out and kind of heat things back up. So that was the big question. How quick will storms get out? Who's going to, you know, recover and see an unstable air mass to kind of fill in that acronym, get that shear, lift, instability, and moisture combination? And as the storms kind of lingered across central and east central Illinois into the early afternoon, we started to kind of wonder, is Champaign-Urbana going to maybe get away with this one? You started to see areas kind of along a line from Springfield down to Mattoon-Charleston were starting to warm back into the 80s, but it was still very cool and stable across Champaign County. And so what happened, we got into the early afternoon, you know, the very potent jet stream comes in, there's a lot of lift, we did generate some thunderstorms that became severe, a couple of them even became tornado warned and were pointed at Champaign County, got a very classic hook echo, very menacing look on the radar, but right as that storm kind of started to cross into Champaign County, it really outran that geographic area that had recovered and had become unstable. And so this storm, even though it had plenty of wind shear to work with, it ran out of the fuel to kind of drive it as it moved into Champaign County, and it quickly weakened and, you know, it did not end up doing a lot of damage across the area. Meanwhile, kind of the next storm down the line crossed Interstate 57 closer to the Mattoon-Charleston area, a little bit further south. They had a little bit more time to recover and become unstable. And of course, we know there was a very different outcome there. That storm ended up producing baseball-sized hail, 80-mile-per-hour winds, and a significant tornado that went into Mattoon-Charleston. And then next down the line, the very same thing happened in Effingham. So a lot of things came together here, and it was just, where's that line going to be across central Illinois between the unstable air to the south and not enough instability off to the north?
Yeah, just to talk a little bit about that storm environment. So we have the capability of launching weather balloons in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences, and students often will launch one in advance of any severe weather. And so we were looking at the models and saying, oh, the shear looks pretty good. You know, what is it actually? So we launched a balloon around 3:15, you know, about 45 minutes before the storms actually came into our area. And just to give you an idea, so the winds were pretty calm at the surface, and that was reflecting that cool air that was sitting at the surface. But we, as the balloon went up, the balloon got up to 1 kilometer above the surface, which is around 2,900 feet. The winds there were already 60 miles per hour.
Wow.
Right?
Yep, that's strong.
You keep going up, 3 kilometers, which is around 10,000 feet, 65 knots, you know, 70 plus miles per hour. So that means that any storm is going to have basically unlimited supply of air to tilt that shear into the vertical. And, you know, one of the sort of classic ideas here is that, you know, basically these storms, they're basically like vacuum cleaners, except the air is spinning going into them horizontally, and then it's just getting turned up. And so it's really no surprise that we had these really massive updrafts that were able to start spinning very rapidly. So if you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Steve Nesbitt, professor at the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the U of I. Today we're talking about the recent severe weather with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist from Nutrien Ag Solutions. So one area that got pretty hard hit was Decatur, but also we saw Effingham get hit. This one seemed to be attracted to population centers for some reason.
Effingham, Illinois is where I am. So much damage at what was called Mid-America Motor Works, a giant building that you can see, collapsed walls, no roof, so many structures and even vehicles just destroyed around here. I can see another one thrown in a field more than 100 yards that way. So lots of damage we can see from our drone this morning that we just took. This is just one community. Thankfully, no fatalities, but there were injuries and a whole nother day of severe weather ahead.
But you were monitoring this these storms later on after sort of our risk shutdown. Can you kind of give a synopsis of some of the things that you noticed out on your chase?
Absolutely. And yeah, we sometimes describe storms or tornadoes as either being well-behaved or not well-behaved. And these were definitely not well-behaved storms. There was a lot of damaging impacts, whether it was tornadoes or these big, you know, hailstones or strong winds in a lot of high population areas. And you know, we talked about this morning line of storms. I hate to sound like a broken record here, but when we're looking at, you know, who's going to recover, it's often, you know, sometimes kind of an east-west or maybe northwest to southeast kind of oriented line, where south of that line you'll recover, north of it you're not. And kind of sometimes right along that, you've got kind of a sweet spot where storms like to kind of ride along that boundary that kind of separates the instability to the south and the cooler air off to the north. So without getting too, you know, into the weeds with that, it became kind of apparent as we got towards the afternoon that there was this kind of boundary from the Springfield and Decatur area down towards Mattoon and Charleston that storms would initially kind of want to favor. And so that was where, you know, I directed my attention after I'd kind of watched the threat in Champaign-Urbana go away. We moved over towards Decatur and watched a supercell thunderstorm over there that was rotating, produced a couple of tornadoes that I believe were weaker in nature and potentially rain-wrapped, but you could really tell these were producing some big hail. You had that kind of aqua green hue to the core in there, and you started seeing reports of, you know, golf ball to baseball sized hail. Tornadoes pass into my deck. A lot of that falling on Interstate 72, which I'm sure was, you know, not enjoyable for the motorists there. But these were the storms that then tracked southeastward toward Mattoon, Charleston. So the storm that produced a lot of hail in Decatur tracked just north of Mattoon, Charleston, and then it was another storm right behind that that then produced the tornado, also while producing baseball-sized hail in the Mattoon-Charleston area as well. So it was a lot of ingredients that, again, we were worried about how is this going to, you know, come together, and it came together with a higher-end, you know, severe storms across the area. It's not very often that we see supercell thunderstorms producing baseball-sized hail and strong, damaging thunderstorms. That's definitely just a couple of times a year event at most, you know, in this area, unless it's a year like 2026, I guess.
Yeah, we're 2026ing here. So heading back to the prior event, June 11th, obviously we're starting to get into a Groundhog Day situation here with the severe weather. But on this day, the National Weather Service confirmed 20 tornadoes that hit parts of northern and central Illinois and northwest Indiana. And of course, you were out there observing these. Very dramatic video of some of these storms, and some of these were very significant tornadoes. You chased several tornadoes from Metamora to Dwight, Illinois, and were able to capture multiple tornadoes at the same time on tape.
Oh my God. Two tornadoes on the ground. It's down to the east. I've never seen anything like this.
So when this happened, where were you and what was that experience like?
Yeah, this was another setup that was almost hard to believe when you were looking at it coming up. The numbers were, I think, a little bit lower than this past June 17th here, but it was another one where it's like, wow, this is really eye-popping wind shear. And we're talking about this one looked a little bit more obvious that we would have a very volatile, hot and muggy air mass. Like temperatures were more like the mid to upper 80s on June 11th versus, you know, upper 70s. And so you can't do a direct comparison there, but this was a little bit more in the way of this is very unstable and really eye-popping wind shear. So there were a couple of targets on this day. And when I say target, I'm kind of doing that as a storm chaser and someone who's trying to pick out where do I think I need to be to document, you know, what's going to happen later on this afternoon or evening. And, you know, there was a lot of attention on kind of the bigger source of lift, the cold front off to the west. But we had a morning line of storms, you know, again, our specialty here in the Midwest. And this line of storms made its way out pretty quickly around the lunch hour. And so there was a pretty obvious boundary, again, separating that hot, muggy air to the south and the rain-cooled air off to the north, where you kind of get some pattern recognition as a meteorologist and a storm chaser who's been doing this for a couple of decades. You start to see some similar things over time and started to get this familiar look across portions of the north central and northeast Illinois, where you start to say, if a storm forms there, that's probably not going to be great. That's probably going to produce tornadoes. And we started to see these little spuds start to pop up on the radar, kind of little blips, early showers. And, you know, again, as a meteorologist and storm chaser, I'm a big believer in looking out the window, looking at what's in front of you versus relying on what the computer is telling you. And even though these were kind of little rain showers on radar, I'm looking at them and these are very big updrafts. These are, you know, very big bases, very intense updrafts. And so I've got what I know is an environment supportive of tornadoes kind of in front of me. And then I've got these, you know, very obvious updrafts that eventually you kind of just know one of these updrafts is going to become a thunderstorm that's going to tap into that. And you get to a situation then where you blink and 2 hours later, you've got three tornadoes that are on the ground at the same time. And it's a little bit weird. You have to remind yourself, oh yeah, like I was forecasting this days in advance. This was the forecast. It's just witnessing a tornado, no matter how many times you do that, it's still a very surreal experience. And you have to kind of just be like, oh yeah, I should have, you know, this is that forecast coming together, as unbelievable as the sight is in front of you.
So have you seen three tornadoes at once before?
I have not seen three tornadoes at once before. I've seen, you know, we talk sometimes about supercells going through cycles where they'll produce a tornado that lasts for, you know, so many minutes, and then that tornado is going to weaken and rope out, and maybe the storm has another cycle where another mesocyclone spins up and it's going to produce a tornado. And I have witnessed a cycle, you know, or two that are so quick that that first tornado hasn't finished and you've got another one developing. But I've never seen one where, you know, I've had a damaging tornado that is, you know, getting towards the end of its life. And now two tornadoes are forming, you know, in the next cycle off to the east. And these two tornadoes kind of orbited each other in kind of an unusual way. And, you know, at one point there were three different storms that I could see the base on each one. And they all looked like they were ready to produce a tornado. And it was just kind of overwhelming to, you know, one, you know, in the most simple way, but like what camera or what storm do I point my camera at? But the other thing is just keeping yourself safe and also trying to warn people here, where you start to feel like every cloud is, you know, at risk of producing a tornado out here. Every updraft, you know, cannot be trusted right now. And that is that unfamiliar tornado outbreak feeling.
Yeah, I had several people, including my wife, who happened to be driving to Chicago that day. And, you know, basically took pictures out of their car and was just like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, well, you just drove under a wall cloud.
Yeah.
You know, it's an extremely conducive environment right there.
Yeah.
In terms of the evolution of what we typically see as meteorologists, it was kind of like a, you know, a candy store type event where
I literally, you know, told people it felt like I was in a tornado playground. And I don't mean to, you know, say that lightly. I know they're causing damage, but it was just, you know, I almost stopped looking at the radar and the GPS. Like, I'm in familiar territory. I know these roads of central Illinois. And it was very different storm mode, you know, comparing June 11th to June 17th. On the 17th, I watched this big tornado cloak itself in a dark wall of rain and hail and move into a populated area, whereas June 11th, I just referenced, I could be in one part of, you know, standing outside of my car and seeing three different storms. And the tornadoes, while they were big and powerful and scary in that way, they were very visible and pretty easy to navigate around if you kind of knew what you were doing. Or if you didn't, it was still easy to get a cool view of, you know, something crazy going on. There was a lot of just, you know, people who happened to be there getting really dramatic tornado videos and cool storm photos from some of these very highly photogenic storms.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the U of I, and we're speaking with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist from Nutrien Ag Solutions. So getting back to that June 11th event, we had a lot of damage here in Champaign-Urbana, a lot of limbs down. We had an event at our local park where a porta potty was blown about 20 feet,
oh, no.
Which is
that's a good distance.
Glad nobody was in there. But there was a EF1 tornado that was confirmed that hit extreme northern Champaign-Urbana over to Frasca Field and out into the country. There was unfortunately some business damage with that one. Can you talk about that event and sort of what processes sort of led to the damaging wind gusts that were occurring that evening?
Yeah, definitely. So again, we talked about a really powerful jet stream kind of leading to this severe weather event, kind of supporting the rotating storms, the organization of those storms, but they can also lead to significant wind damage within those storms as well. And there's a couple of different ways that we can generate really intense winds in a severe thunderstorm. You know, some of that is, you know, big downbursts from really potent updrafts, loading a lot of, you know, precipitation in there. And we can generate big cold pools and get big forward propagating, you know, clusters of storms and bow echoes. And so we can do that without a lot of wind shear. But sometimes when you bring in a really potent jet stream where, as you just, you know, mentioned, sometimes, you know, you can go up just 2,900 feet above your head and you've got 60 mile per hour winds. And so sometimes those downdrafts within the storms can help kind of transport those strong winds down closer to the surface. It's kind of some complicated, you know, dynamics going on there, but you had kind of both those ingredients coming together, very strong thunderstorms that could produce those big downbursts, but then you also had very intense jet stream winds that were able to be kind of brought down closer to the surface, and that's where you get those 80 to 100 mile per hour winds kind of across a widespread area. You know, sometimes numerous counties at the same time across the span of 100 miles are dealing with these really, really damaging winds.
So Illinois has seen an unprecedented amount of tornado action in the last several years, and a lot of people are talking about how this has impacted sort of our expectations for severe weather here in Illinois. And so people are talking about, you know, even yesterday I was at the store, people say, hey, you know, is Tornado Alley moving or expanding to include Illinois? Can you talk about what Tornado Alley is and what this means for Illinois to be included in this notorious region?
Absolutely. And I know that I think it was Jeff and I were talking about Tornado Alley a few episodes ago. And you can ask any meteorologist or storm chaser to draw Tornado Alley, and they'll all draw it a little bit different. But, you know, we think about Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, Nebraska. You know, the Great Plains typically is what folks are going to think about when you talk about Tornado Alley. And there's been some research. It's, you know, come out over the last 5 years or so that's been gaining some traction and news, and it always becomes kind of a hot topic when we have one of these big severe weather events in the Midwest or sometimes in the Southeast U.S. And it's, you know, research that reflects that not necessarily that every year we're seeing more and more tornadoes kind of stacking higher and higher numbers across the Midwest. But what it showed was, you know, over time, we are seeing more days where we've got these tornado favorable conditions or these ingredients coming together, you know, supportive of supercells and tornadoes. Now, the data also shows that, you know, while we're not doing year over year getting bigger, there's also kind of an expansion on the volatility of, you know, year to year where, you know, Illinois has had a very unprecedented year this year. It's very possible we could have an extremely quiet year next year, or we could have another very busy year. It doesn't necessarily make it easier to predict or anything like that, but it's all about just kind of looking at the frequency of which we're seeing these ingredients come together. And more frequently, you know, especially some of these cold season events, talking about the late winter and the early spring, seeing those ingredients come together over the Midwest or over the Southeast. And again, this doesn't mean it's not happening out in Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and Texas, but this has been a pretty good example or a pretty good year to kind of, you know, look at this data and kind of say, yeah, you know, traditional Tornado Alley has been very quiet this year. Meanwhile, you know, areas to the east of that, closer to the Mississippi River, have really had frequent severe weather for much of the year.
Well, thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Always happy to do so. Hopefully, no more current severe weather to talk about in the near term.
Well, we'll see about that. We've been talking with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist from Nutrien Ag Solutions. I'm Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for joining us on Weather Realness. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.